The Kyoto Protocol, why it won't work the way it is now. What hasn't been written about Kyoto? Is it really necessary to go over the protocol and explain any more than the fact that it's all about the world's burgeoning greenhouse gas emissions and the way we are increasing them, along with a myriad of other problems that don't seem to have any immediate fix? Should we dwell on the idea that one country can buy emission points from another instead of curbing their own problem? Or perhaps we could make ourselves feel better about the whole global warming issue by concentrating on the newscasts that seem at least to show that we are talking about it and something seems to be getting done. Short of lip service, very little is being done and will never be done until it becomes an issue that can't be ignored. By then it would be too late for many of us. And that effect is happening to some extent today. El Niño is being altered. Glacial melting is occurring, and California residents are dying of heat exhaustion the way others in Africa have been doing for years. This is an overview of the Kyoto Protocol. Kyoto Protocol is an agreement made under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and is an amendment to the International Treaty on Climate Change, assigning mandatory targets for the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions to signatory nations. Countries that ratify this protocol commit to reduce their emissions of carbon dioxide and five other greenhouse gases, or engage in emissions trading if they maintain or increase emissions of these gases. According to a press release from the United Nations Environmental Program, the Kyoto Protocol is an agreement under which industrialized nations will reduce their collective emissions of greenhouse gases by 5.2% compared to the year 1990. But note that, compared to the emission levels that would be expected in 2010 without the protocol, this target represents a 29% cut. The goal is to lower overall emissions of six greenhouse gases, namely carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, sulfur, hexafluoride, hydrofluorocarbon, and perfluorocarbon. Calculated as an average over the five-year period of 2008 to 2012, national targets range from 8% reductions for the European Union and some others to 7% for the US, 6% for Japan, 0% for Russia, and permit increases of 8% for Australia and 10% for Iceland. Emissions trading. Kyoto is a cap-and-trade system that imposes national caps on the emissions of Annex I countries. On average, this cap requires countries to reduce their emissions 5.2% below the 1990 baseline over the 2008 to 2012 period. Although these caps are national-level commitments, in practice, most countries will devote their emission targets to individual industrial entities such as power plants and paper factories. This is the case today in the EU, and other countries may follow suit in time. This means that the ultimate buyers of credits are often individual companies that expect their emissions to exceed their quota. Their assigned amount units, allowances for short. Typically, they will purchase credits directly from another party with excess allowances from a broker or a developer or an exchange. Opposition to Kyoto. The two main countries currently opposed to the treaty are the United States and Australia. Some public policy experts who are skeptical of global warming see Kyoto as a scheme to either retard the growth of the world's industrial democracies or to transfer wealth to the third world in what they claim is a global socialism initiative. Others agree that protocol does not go far enough to curb greenhouse emissions. Niue, the Cook Islands, and Nauru added notes to this effect when signing the protocol. Asian Asia-Pacific Partnership on Clean Development and Climate. The Asia-Pacific Partnership is an agreement between six Asia-Pacific nations, Australia, the People's Republic of China, India, Japan, South Korea, and the United States. It was introduced at the Association of South Asian Nations Regional Forum on July 28, 2005. The pact allows those countries to set their goals for reducing greenhouse gas emissions individually, but with no enforcement mechanism. Supporters of the pact see it as complementing the Kyoto Protocol whilst being more flexible, while critics have said the pact will be ineffective without any enforcement measures and ultimately aims to void the negotiations leading the protocol, called to replace the current Kyoto Protocol. Negotiations started in Montreal in December 2005. Cost-benefit analysis. Economists have been trying to analyze the overall net benefit of Kyoto Protocol through cost-benefit analysis. Just as in the case of climatology, there is a disagreement due to large uncertainties in economic variables. Still, the estimates so far generally indicate either that observing the Kyoto Protocol is more expensive than not observing it, or that the protocol has a marginal net benefit which exceeds the cost of simply adjusting to global warming. The recent Copenhagen Consensus Project found that the Kyoto Protocol would slow down the process of global warming, but have a superficial overall benefit. Position of Canada. On December 17, 2002, Canada ratified the treaty. While numerous polls have shown support for the Kyoto Protocol, around 70%, that is, there is still some opposition, particularly by some business groups, non-governmental climate scientists, and energy concerns, using arguments similar to those being used by the U.S. There is also a fear that the U.S. companies will not be affected by the Kyoto Protocol, and the Canadian companies will be at a disadvantage in terms of trade. Wikipedia, free online encyclopedia. Regarding CBC and Greenpeace, the UN-organized conference gathering all the parties of the Kyoto Protocol, and then some, approximately 190 nations were represented by the 8,000 delegates. The largest intergovernmental climate gathering since 1997, when the protocol was adopted. That's when 146 countries promised to cut greenhouse gas emissions. It all boils down to gas emissions. Power plants, factories, and personal vehicles emit a mixture of gases that trap heat in the Earth's atmosphere, hence the term global warming. You can go to a carbon broker and say, I want to buy 100 megatons of carbon. Can you find a partner to offer me that? And the carbon brokers will go around, just like the shopping for money or a car, said Delegate Bill Hare, a member of Greenpeace International. Greenpeace has historically opposed carbon trading, preferring that nations first work at reducing domestic emissions. But the group says it has recognized that carbon trading is the only way for Kyoto to move ahead and allow countries like Japan, Canada, and Australia to meet emissions-reducing targets. Ruth Greenspan Bell, Foreign Affairs Online. Pessimistic experts who believe the world has already reached the point of no return advise that society adapt to the new conditions rather than trying to correct them. Many politicians are more optimistic. In July 2005, leaders of the group of eight highly industrialized states pledged to put themselves on a path to slow and, as the science justifies, stop and then reverse the growth of greenhouse gases. Assuming there is still time to act, the question is how? Al Gore. An Inconvenient Truth is a riveting movie that promises to spark debate and may affect critical environmental change. The story weaves the science of global warming with former Vice President Al Gore's personal history and longtime commitment to communicating the need to reverse the effects of global climate change. In Davis Guggenheim's film, Mr. Gore indisputably correlates scientific evidence supporting global warming with exponentially rising temperatures, already responsible for dramatic climate shifts like ice cap melting, drought, and rising sea levels. Interwoven with this entertaining and insightful argument are intimate moments revealing the passionate humanitarian side of Gore. San Francisco Chronicle, Senator John Kerry. British Prime Minister Tony Blair and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger met with more than a dozen top business officials to discuss climate change. Executives who have gathered in support of mandatory limits on greenhouse gas emissions. Imagine that, big business stepping up to the plate, but the Bush administration refused to take a seat at the table. That's a conspicuous absence for the president, who says that climate change is a challenge that requires 100% effort, ours and the rest of the world's. But it's not surprising for a president whose preferred policy is to rewrite science to protect oil company profits at the expense of the general public. Our gasoline-burning cars, for example, are the second largest source of U.S. global warming pollution. Americans will put more than 300 million new cars on the road during the next 20 years. If we give Detroit tax credits to retool their factories and build the best, most efficient vehicles, and give consumers tax credits to buy them, we'll take a big step towards solving global warming. Finally, the United States is the world's single largest emitter of greenhouse gases, but the United States alone cannot solve the challenge of climate change. It is going to take action from other countries, both developed and developing. We must re-engage in discussions with the international community and work together to plan a path forward. We must do it now. Carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere today are beyond anything in the geological record, going back 40,000 years. It is clear that the outdated policies that still drive our 21st century economics have resulted in a dangerous interference with the global climate. Estimated methane emissions have been revised from 12.5 million tons carbon equivalent in 2004 to 14.1 million tons, an increase of 12.7%. Equivalent revisions have been made for all years back to 1990. This is as a result of revised factors being used to estimate emissions from landfill sites.